You'll never need a podcast to explain to you why you lost money when you shop on Amazon.com. Get the best deal on everything you need and help support Rob Has a Podcast whenever you start your Amazon shopping with our link, robhasawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, it's robhasawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with another edition of Why the Latest Player Lost on Survivor. And today we're going to be talking about why Mari Takahashi was the latest player to be voted out of Survivor. And we're going to go through it all with the man who has written the Survivor Rule. I'm not sure if it's so much of a book or a pamphlet, but a manifesto at the very least. The great David Bloomberg.
Happy belated International Podcast Day to
yes.
you.
Yes, oh, thank you, thank you.
Happy, but yeah, I'll stop now. There's a reason I don't sing like Wiggler does.
Yes, International Podcast Day was September 30th, and I got my son very upset by telling him it was International Podcast Day. It was his birthday on Thursday, and he was not happy about that. And then even today, we were recording this on Saturday, which we normally recorded on Sunday, but I'm recording it on Saturday, and he told me, it's not Podcast Day today, Dad. Like, all right, fine, fine. He really was not having any part of International Podcast Day, David.
Well, it's like you said, it's hard having a birthday so close to a major holiday.
Yes, yes, yeah. What are you going to do? All right. So, David, happy to have you back here. I know that you are going back and forth with Darnell on Twitter over his side bet he made with me on the feedback show over which would be higher, the number of Lucy confessionals this season or Chicago Bears wins.
Well, I figure Lucy, at least on the episode when she gets booted, whenever that may be, she's at least going to get one confessional.
Yeah.
I am not, however, convinced that the Bears will get one win.
Okay, we'll see.
So they will get the number one draft pick.
And Lucy will not, no matter what you're saying.
Right, right.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will keep an eye on that. Keep a running tally of Bears wins and Lucy confessionals. Boy, everybody really just piling on Lucy. It's only been two shows. I think that maybe we might be jumping the gun on these things. I mean, it's just possible that she just didn't have a lot of anything to say, really, in these first two shows.
Well, we're not piling on Lucy. We're piling on the absence of Lucy.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. I do think that you could explain it away at this point. It's not like she's been on the show nine episodes and you never see her on there. You know, 10-person tribe. And then you have like this medical situation with Paul in the last episode, which ate up a lot of screen time. So I think that the worm might turn for Lucy.
Yeah, and her name was mentioned on one of the secret scene confessionals.
Okay.
So she is out there.
Okay, that's good. All right, so we're out there as well, and we're ready to talk about why Mari lost on Survivor. And I think this is going to be an interesting discussion because I thought she was doing a really good job, and I know a lot of people had her as a winner pick as well. So I think it'll be a fun dissection to go through your rules and try to figure out what went wrong for Mari.
Yeah, I agree. I do have a couple of things before we get to that.
Yes.
First, of course, we should talk about our predictions from last week. Mm-hmm. And we'll start with the predictions I got right, because it happens so rarely that, you know, you got to take credit. So we were both right that Paul was the medical issue.
Yes.
And I was correct that the line was taken out of context and that it was just dehydration. So I'm going to pat myself on the back for that.
Kudos to you.
And then we'll stop. Yeah, yes. Then we'll stop because we got the rest of it completely wrong.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have even the right tribe that we presumed that it was going to be the Gen Xers going to tribal council again. So, I mean, it's hard to in the part of the game where only one tribe goes to tribal council, hard to, you know, have the tribe right and the boot right.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah. It's tricky.
Now, another thing I wanted to add is, you know, there's been some talk about David finding the immunity idol. And I know a lot of people have seemed underwhelmed with the camouflage job done on the coconut. Mm-hmm. But I personally had no problem with it because it does still take some amount of observation to notice it. And for the idol itself, so once he got it out of the coconut, Ken said in a secret scene confessional that it didn't even really look like an idol to him. And he doubted that it was until David showed him the piece of paper that comes with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that production has accomplished one job of putting some doubt in the minds of players, because they're making the idols easier to fake. And just overall, I think people will be a little more skeptical when they see something, you know. Yeah. It's just an effing stick. So I like that. They're all not going to look the same, and that's good. Although David already immediately figured out a way around that, because he showed the note.
Yeah.
But theoretically, you could hold on to that note and make a fake idol, mm-hmm. and, you know, okay, you're golden there.
I agree that it's interesting to see how if the idol is going to be played when it doesn't exactly look as ornate as the traditional hidden immunity idol. And I have to be honest, I didn't get a good look at it from the episode on Wednesday night. But just in terms of the idol being in a coconut, that the survivors are just all the time out there looking for coconuts. You're sort of like scavenging, looking for different things to eat. So eventually people are just going to stumble onto these coconuts. And even if they don't even realize this coconut appears to be different from all the other coconuts, like, people are just going to open it and find it. So in a lot of ways, it's almost like the thing where they put the note in the coffee beans to the hidden immunity idol, where you end up just like sort of like stumbling into the clue more so than it's something that you would find by searching for the idol.
Yeah. I mean, this did seem to be a bit far out. I don't know. It's hard to say how far David was going to get those rocks. I guess looking at his, how should I say this, musculature, he probably wasn't lugging those rocks from too far away.
How dare you?
Yeah. I know. Well, it's similar to mine, you know.
Okay. You can relate.
So, yeah. So the other thing I want to talk about before we get to Mari is the showmances.
Let me put on my love goggles.
Love goggles.
I'm the only one on this discussion with you, so I'm not sure I feel comfortable with that, Rob.
Okay.
But anyway, I'm used to hearing the term showmance on Big Brother, mm-hmm. not so much on Survivor. They've almost come to be expected on Big Brother. But I feel like they're aberrations on Survivor, and rightly so, because, well, they're nasty and disgusting and all the things that Michaela said.
The showmances are?
Well, the two people doing what people do in showmances, yes.
That's disgusting. Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like we'll be addressing this topic more at some point this season, mm-hmm. you know. But when Taylor said in a secret scene confessional that people are worrying about him and Figgy being a couple, quote, way, way in advance, he's wrong, because he admits it brings danger, but he also says they're willing to take the risk because if it works, then they own the island. And he hopes to come out of the game with both Figgy and $1 million.
Yeah.
But he's here to win, you know, the money.
Taylor's gambit.
Yeah. Now, how often have we heard that? Mostly, again, on Big Brother, especially recently with James. Well, you know, I'm here to win the money. And then they go off and, you know, try to get a girl instead.
Yeah. I hear it one time, David, where it went well, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. But
hey, Bloomberg, smarten up.
Yes. And everybody and their brothers posted that on Twitter.
Yes.
At the same time, including me.
Yeah. Even but my mom just was like, do they not remember Boston Rob?
Oh, she was reading my Twitter.
Yes.
That must have been it. But still, with him doing it this soon and everything, they lucked out. And I just don't think that luck will hold. But we'll discuss that, you know, whenever we get to why Taylor and or Figgy lost.
Okay. All right. So, yeah. All right. So anything else about Mari before we dive into the rules?
You know, unfortunately for her, this was unlike the games she normally plays, and she doesn't get more lives, couldn't save the game to go back and make a different choice. But with so many people having chosen her as the winner pick, I think it came as a big shock to see her as the first to leave from her tribe. So let's go ahead and figure out why Mari lost.
All right, let's figgy it out. Let's go through and start with the first rule, which is to scheme and plot. Mari, was she doing the scheming and plotting as far as you're concerned?
Well, last week we discussed how we really didn't see Rachel doing much, if anything, when it came to scheming and plotting. And that's not quite the case with Mari. but unfortunately, she didn't exactly do a whole heck of a lot of it. We saw her being involved in the Freaks and Geeks Alliance, and, you know, maybe at one point she could have even been considered one of its leaders in the first episode. But the question was, where was she in the second episode? PG noted in your recap podcast that we didn't really see her in all that scrambling. We saw Zeke, we saw Adam, Jay, Michelle, Michaela, several others, but Mari seemed like more of a non-player character. It's hard to know for sure what she was doing, but I think it's somewhat telling that she just didn't seem too involved with the ongoing discussions. It was kind of like she decided who was going and that was it. And we could theorize that maybe Mari was just as involved, but the producers simply didn't show it. But again, going back to PG, she mentioned that Hannah told her that Mari was not engaging strategically. And then again, in a secret scene, Will said the same thing, that Mari didn't talk strategy to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
On top of that, I think PG mentioned that Hannah had said the Freaks and Geeks group was a looser situation than the tight four-person Triforce. And, you know, maybe less of an alliance and more just a group who hung out together, which, of course, isn't nearly as strategically sound, or at least not as solid as Mari might have thought they were. You know, for her part, Mari said on her day after video that she thought her demise was not paying attention to Jeff Probst at Tribal Council when he was talking about Hannah. But I don't think she could have done anything at that point other than maybe blowing up Hannah's game for the future. Hannah was the extra vote, and I just don't think Mari could have schemed her way out of that oncoming vote at that point, even if she had realized what was going on. She needed to do it back at camp. She needed to be involved in all those discussions when everyone was running to everyone else.
I definitely feel like that she was part of the initial scheming, but I don't think that she was able to keep up with sort of like the maintaining of the plot that they came up with. I mean, even her and Zeke and Adam and those two guys are people who have a lot more experience with following the show than Mari does. Even they were sort of hornswoggled on this one. So hard to really beat up Mari about this plot that came together. I mean, I just think it was a really good job by Michelle and pulling off something that nobody saw coming in this group.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it was a combination of things. Like you said, Zeke and Adam and some of those, well, mostly Zeke and Adam, I guess, you know, really did get just cut out of the loop somehow. And they, you know, we're going to see the repercussions of that. But I feel like at least they were talking to other people and we didn't see Mari doing that. And you're right, Michelle and Jay, I think mostly Michelle, but I think Jay too, deserve a lot of credit for doing what needed to be done in terms of out scheming the group that should have been in the majority.
And you know what else? It could be where it's like Figgy is the target. And everybody knows that Figgy is the target. So you're keeping an eye on Figgy. You're keeping an eye on Taylor. Maybe Mari is like really just keeping making sure they're not going to be up to something. And you totally don't realize that behind the scenes, here's Michelle going around and brokering all these backroom deals to save Figgy. And you were watching Figgy the whole day. Like, boy, she's not even doing anything. She's not trying to turn this thing over. This is an open and shut case tonight. She knows she's going.
That's true. That's true. And I would, you know, side or lean somewhat that way. But like I said, even two of her allies, Hannah and Will, said she wasn't really strategizing with anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it was something as simple as, okay, we know who we're doing and that's it. Done.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we saw the look on Michaela's face when they asked who they're voting for and she was like, obviously Figgy, you know, the look on her face was, why would we do anything else? Come on, that's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for Mari, that might have been it. You know, okay, yeah, she's right. And I don't even remember if she was in that discussion, but she might have had that same outlook.
Okay, so rule number two is don't scheme and plot too much. Sounds like that Mari barely was doing enough scheming and plotting to satisfy rule one. Got to feel like that she's not scheming and plotting too much.
Correct. She was not. Now, I was going to do a little bit of chiding of her allies, like Zeke and company, for telling Jay about the plan to vote out Figgy, because that obviously violates the idea of keeping your scheming secret.
Mm-hmm.
even though Mari didn't do it herself, it, you know, was sort of done on her behalf by her allies. But then we found out through interviews and confessionals that Jay actually came to them because Figgy had gotten super paranoid and started throwing out his name.
Mm-hmm.
To Zeke and Adam and the rest, it, you know, obviously seemed like Jay was on board. They weren't giving information to the enemy. They had brought the enemy on board with them. But then, unfortunately for them, it seems that as soon as Jay heard that Figgy was the target, he realized he could use it to his advantage. And he wanted to continue with his four-person Triforce alliance.
Ungrateful Jay.
Yes, yes. Or sneaky Jay, one of the two. And he was able to, you know, deflect the vote away from Figgy and, you know, of course, himself, probably use that to ingratiate himself with Figgy so that she wouldn't, you know, put his name back out there again. So he was able to deflect that vote away from Figgy and, of course, himself, and, you know, probably ingratiate himself with Figgy as well. But while the freaks and geeks were willing to share information, the Triforce knew enough to keep Zeke and Adam out of the loop because they were too tight with Mari. So, you know, like you had just mentioned, those two were blindsided by this vote just as much as Mari was. And they were only able to do that because Zeke and Adam were known to be close to Mari.
Mm-hmm.
So we can criticize, and as I did, Figgy and Taylor for being an obvious duo. But there's also something to be said for the fact that Mari was obviously tight with Zeke and Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that that
interesting
bond ended up hurting her.
Okay. Rule number three is be flexible. Mari is a ballerina, a dancer. Surely, David, she must be flexible.
From a physical standpoint, I would guess so, although there, you know, wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to show that. And similarly, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to show that from a game standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was the first vote for the millennials. We're only 7 days into it. There just wasn't really any huge thing that she could have done, any big decision. On the other hand, there weren't any particular problems we saw. She didn't get into a fight about building the shelter or get involved in the fight about who should be allowed to kiss whom. You know, she seemed to be getting along just fine. The one thing that was missing, obviously, was the ability to know which way the tribe was leaning so she could ensure that she was part of that group.
Yeah.
Last week, we saw Rachel on the other tribe know that the vote was likely to go against her and not doing anything about it. This week, we saw Mari just not at all realizing that the majority had turned away from the plan she thought was in place and toward voting her out. She just didn't have her finger on the tribe's pulse as much as she thought she did, possibly because that pulse was racing at that point.
You know, in some ways, this is a little bit of a stretch, but this...
And whatever she's talking about right now, it's probably about puppies or butts or something.
A little bit of a stick to the plan, no?
I don't know that it's so much stick to the plan as I'm going to pretend or ignore the fact that there might be another plan happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, she just was so hyper-focused on this is what's going to happen that she didn't even know there was a possibility. And I think part of that was that she knew Hannah. And Hannah seems to be a little bit goofy, in a good way, I think. And again, I just don't know what Mari could have done at that point. Even if she says, well, Jeff, you know, that's interesting. I would like to know what Hannah's talking about there. What happens to Hannah? You know, does Hannah just, you know, look like a deer in the headlights at that point and give up the information? Does someone step in to try to rescue the situation? Even if they make the situation public, let's say that Michelle spills all the beans at that point and says, well, it's funny you should ask, Mari, because we've all decided that your plan isn't going to happen and we're voting you out.
Mm-hmm.
Does anything change at that point?
Yeah,
I don't think it does.
Yeah. In terms of being flexible, I mean, I feel like that you could really interpret it both ways. I mean, is Mari being flexible by saying like, oh, I'm sure it's just nothing and just like, you know, whatever it is, I'm sure it's cool. Like if it's some, you know, she doesn't possibly think that it's her that's going to be potentially getting voted out. Or is it a lack of flexibility to not explore the idea that something different could be happening?
I think it is more of a lack of flexibility, but by that time, it was too late anyway.
Yeah.
The flexibility had to come earlier in realizing that something else was going on.
Okay, rule four, don't let your emotions control you. I don't feel like we saw Mari lose control of her emotions at any point in this game.
No, I don't either. I think she was fine based on her post-game interviews. She felt she had been close with Hannah and thought she wasn't good with Will because he was a fan. But she didn't base her voting around that. She wasn't the one who got into a big argument. So, yeah, she was fine here.
Rule five, pretend to be nice, play the social game, keep your politics and controversial beliefs to yourself. I don't think we got any hints that Mari was at any point not playing nice, not playing the social game, and having controversial beliefs.
Well, Rob, this is where things start to get interesting and maybe not so straightforward.
Okay.
You're right. We didn't see anything suggesting that she had problems pretending to be nice, but the social game is a question for me.
It's a tricky game.
Yeah. On the know-it-alls, you had said that her social game wasn't the cause of her loss.
Hey, don't quote me and to make a point against me, David.
But you know, I've had a few more days to think about it than you did.
Okay.
And a little bit more information available. So the more I think about it, the more I believe it actually was a factor for several reasons.
How dare you?
Yeah, I know. First, let's address her age. She was 31 years old, which is over a decade older than Will.
Mm-hmm.
She has some things in common with the younger ones, but, you know, there can also be a lot of differences at that age, if only because of where they are in their lives. And if we just take a look at what Mari herself said in her Getting to Know Mari pregame video, she said she was 25 when she changed her outlook on life. But looking at the other players on her tribe, 6 of the 9 other players are 25 or under when they were playing. They might not have even gotten to that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts her at a different place in life than the majority of her tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could have been a factor. A second point.
Well, how so? Just because she was having trouble relating to them?
Well, or they were having trouble relating to her. And it didn't necessarily need to be anything specific. This wasn't a clash of, you know, the shelter people versus the beach people. It just a difference in, you know, adults talking to kids. And she had made that transition, even though she was close in age, you know, relatively speaking. I think at least in her mind, she had made more of a transition to adulthood, whereas perhaps some of them had not, or were still thinking, you know, more along the lines of someone who is in their younger 20s. And, you know, maybe I'm just putting this in the mindset of someone who's been helping their son work on college essays about transitions to adulthood. I don't know. But I do think that there's a difference there.
Okay.
I don't think it was the sole difference. So a second point is one that has come up about the difference between playing a two-dimensional game on a screen and a three-dimensional game in person. And I know some people quickly dismiss this.
Myself included.
Yeah, I wasn't going to mention your name again this
time.
That's
fine. I'll dismiss it right now before you even say it.
Well, I'm going to undismiss it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do think there's some merit in considering it. Okay, and I'm going to bring us to an unlikely place that I've used for comparison before, and that is poker.
Mm-hmm.
So over the years, there have been a number of professional poker players who had huge success and made a lot of money playing online poker. But some of them had problems moving from the online world to the world of real poker tables, real chips, real cards. Not everyone is like a friend of the podcast, Jason Somerville, who has a great personality and social game in addition to good strategic gameplay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there were different reasons for online players having difficulty, and a number of them eventually adapted or became even better live players. But Mari didn't have a long time to make a transition like that. She was jumping straight into it. She was used to playing online games, playing to an audience she didn't interact with on this kind of level. And I do have to wonder if that played a role.
I think that that's a little bit of a misconception of her and her career, because I don't believe, and again, I'm not super familiar with her work prior to Survivor, that she isn't somebody who, you know, you think of like, okay, she was just like in a basement playing video games and video game tournaments and then went on to Survivor. I mean, that she has done a lot of work, you know, she does all the stuff on Smosh and she does a lot of hosting and stuff like that, where she's interacting with people in a very competitive world all the time. So I don't think it's as simple as to say, well, she's a video gamer and then she's not used to dealing with people face to face. I think she's doing a lot of face to face interactions and she's had a lot of success in her career. So I dismiss that still, David.
I still think those interactions are different, though. I mean, and again, like you said, I'm not fully cognizant of everything that she has done, but you know, I know some, well, I know some people her age and I know people who are involved in video gaming, and the types of interaction are still not the same as being with someone 24/7, having to put on, you know, a particular look on your face, having to deal with them, being disgusting and having sand in your drawers. You know, it's, and even Mari addressed that a little bit in her day after video, because she said that when she's at home, if she's not smiling or emoting, which is not to be confused with emojiing, by the way.
Sure.
Yeah. It doesn't mean she's not interested in the conversation. It's just who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think many of us have this happen. For example, the other day I was walking down the hall at work and a coworker walked by me and said, "Oh, don't be so serious." I wasn't, you know, I apparently
was coworker, just
thinking
the
about,
Joker.
No, but he thinks he is.
Does he talk like Zeke?
Let's not get into him. Okay. And I don't mean Zeke. I mean, the coworker, you know, apparently I was thinking about something and the look on my face just unintentionally conveyed a grim outlook. And if she knows she can have something like that happen, if she's in a conversation and she just, you know, isn't smiling all the time or showing her interest, you can try to rise above that. But again, 24/7, that's hard to do. And, you know, on Survivor, sometimes an incident like that is all you need to have someone view you in a different light.
Yeah.
If I were on Survivor then, and I were walking down the beach with that look on my face, someone might have said, "What the hell is David so pissed about?"
Yeah.
"He must have found out bad news. Something must be going wrong with our plan. We'd better switch it."
But David, I don't mean to be so dismissive on this point, but I mean, did we have any evidence that there are players who thought that about her? Of like, "Oh, I always thought that Mari was in a bad mood, or I didn't feel like she liked me." I mean, I definitely get that Hannah and Will had said in different ways that I didn't feel like she was working with me on an alliance level. But I don't get the sense that anybody thought that they had a social issue with her or that she wasn't fitting in with anybody.
Well, actually, one thing that PG did mention was that Hannah said not only was she not engaging strategically, but socially.
Mm-hmm.
She, you know, PG mentioned socially. And, you know, like we had said about Will as well. And those are the people within her alliance.
And who was Hannah talking about the butts and the puppies with?
Well, I don't know. That is that may have to remain a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Question
or
for
maybe,
Hannah.
That's right. Maybe she was talking butts and puppies, but Mari was, you know, not showing enough of an interest in butts and puppies.
I guess so.
Yeah. So I don't know how that would be possible.
Okay. All right. Well, I do think that there's going to be a lot of fruit here in Rule 6. Don't be too much of a threat.
Well, okay. I do want to say one more thing before we move to Rule 6. And I do want to give Zeke some credit here.
Okay.
Because Zeke was also in the Freaks and Geeks Alliance, as you could have called it, Freaks, Geeks, and Zeeks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And he had also been acting as something of a leader in that regard. I was thinking about how lucky Zeke was, and this was even before I listened to Know-It-Alls, because I think you hit on some of the same points there, that he was lucky that he wasn't the one targeted.
Sure.
Now I see that as more of a testament that he built relationships better relationships compared to the ones Mari had built. Mm-hmm. So when the idea to flip the vote came up, it wasn't pointed right back at Zeke. It was pointed at the one who apparently people felt they had less of a bond with.
You ready to talk? Don't be too much of a threat.
Yes, I am.
I think Mari was a big threat.
Yes, I do too. Which is funny because normally when you say someone is a threat, it's because they're scheming and plotting. But we already discussed how she wasn't really scheming and plotting. It seems like people expected her to do a lot of it, even though she hadn't done it yet. And on Survivor, as you well know, everything can be based on perception. So in your interview, Mari said she thought maybe she appeared too threatening. In her day after video, she said maybe from the rest of the tribe's point of view, it was smart to get rid of her as a threat because she was strategic and would be good at individual immunity challenges. Now, I think she missed the point a little bit there because she also said it would be too early to be thinking that way. And if they were thinking of her as that type of threat, like looking that far ahead to an individual immunity challenge, they would be wrong, that it would be way too early. But when we talk about her potentially being a threat, I want to bring up something interesting here. You
Please
had mentioned
do.
At the very beginning of the podcast, a lot of people had picked her as their winner. And indeed, there were a lot of salty people when she was voted out because she was their pick to win. So, for example,
like Nicole Stradamus.
Yes, yes. 119 Rob Has a Podcast patrons predicted a winner. They made an official winner pick.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those 119, 29 of them, that's almost a quarter of all those who voted, picked Mari. And that doesn't even count Wiggler and Nicole Stradamus. Nobody else was even close. The second place was David, who had 13 votes out of those 119. Something made her stand out as being a potential winner. And that came to us just from a bio and maybe a video or some pre-show interviews.
Mm-hmm.
If it came to us that way, and I say us as a group, because of course you and I didn't pick her, but it had to come across to people who spent 7 days with her. And I don't think they just saw her as a threat for a long term. They saw it as something they should deal with right away. You know, we saw Michelle saying Mari is dangerous because she's smart. And Mari herself said, you know, again, looking at her getting to know you video, that she plays games for a living and this is a giant game. So she feels like she was primed for it. If she was saying that to the cameras, others could have seen the same thing. And I think they were worried about that.
Well, I don't even think it was that they said it to the cameras, that you had somebody like Will, who she said in her exit interview with me, she wasn't expecting there to be an 18-year-old kid who was on top of everything going on the internet that was going to really be very familiar with who she was from Smosh.
Yeah, I mean, if she had been on the Gen X tribe, she certainly wouldn't have had to worry about that.
Oh, they would have had no idea. She would have been fine.
You do what for a living? Then she'd have been, you know, oh, a lazy kid just sits around and plays video games all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, why don't you do something with yourself, Mari? When are you going to make a career?
Yeah, go milk a drone.
Okay. Anything else on the threatiness of Mari?
No, I think we've covered that.
Vote out the weak, then the strong. Then the weak, then the strong is what you preach to the players. Major violation here, right, David?
Yeah, yeah, major violation.
Stupid
for the
millennials.
Tribe.
What are you thinking?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they should be in the phase of getting rid of the weak, obviously. Someone who falls into that category for one of two reasons. Either someone who will hurt you in challenges or will hurt the overall tribe dynamic. And Mari was neither of those.
Look, to be fair, I don't really think that there is somebody in this tribe that is holding them back in the challenges. I mean, that they are a pretty solid group. I mean, I don't know how many standouts there are, but there's nobody, like, they don't have somebody who's just like a complete anchor in these challenges.
Right. But on the other hand, we've only seen two challenges and, you know, like one of them Hannah sat out for.
Mm-hmm,
so...
Sure.
I wouldn't have expected them to get rid of someone for challenge weakness, like you said, but there is someone who definitely falls into the area of creating divisions within the tribe. And that was the original target,
mm-hmm.
but you know, didn't end up being Figgy. So we have to look at, okay, what happened here? The good of the tribe overall clearly did not match up with the good of the Titus Alliance. And that's what we saw here. Figgy's allies stepped in to save her. You know, like you had suggested earlier, Figgy herself didn't seem to have a whole lot to do with it, but her allies came in and saved her puppies and butt.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings up the question, okay, if it wasn't due to weakness, why did the players vote against Mari? The four-person Triforce Alliance had their obvious reasons. But what about Figgy fighter Michaela?
Mm-hmm.
Well, she had a secret scene confessional in which she said, if you lie to her, but she finds a use for you, she'll still keep you around. She knows that she has to do fewer things that make herself stick out, and she just has to play to the majority and blend in with the group. So in other words, Michaela did a good job of following these rules. She didn't let her emotions interfere with her voting. She saw which way the tribe was leaning, or at least she was convinced to be part of leaning the tribe that way, and she made sure she was with that majority. So that's why Michaela didn't let her emotions determine her vote. Then there was Will. He also had the secret scene confessional, and he said he found himself between alliances, and even though he didn't like everyone in a particular group, which he had to be talking about the Triforce, he knew he had to look at his long-term game. Thinking short-term would mean voting out Figgy, and he really wanted to because he said she has no social awareness and could be a liability later. But on the other hand, he said Mari didn't talk strategy to anyone, like I had mentioned before, and he didn't know if he could work with her in the game long-term because of that. So he had to decide between someone he liked but couldn't work with and a person he hated but could work with. And like Michaela, he chose the game over his emotions, again, making the right decision. Now, we may not like the outcome of that decision if you were, you know, rooting for Mari, but both of them did what they believed was in the best interest of their games. And so, you know, I can't fault them for that.
Okay.
Instead, I have to give them a gold star.
Gold star awarded. David, the appendices of your survivor rules include Appendix A, do whatever it takes to get idols. No mention of the hidden immunity idol for the millennials. Is that a Gen X thing looking for the idol?
I suspect people were looking for it and just didn't find it.
All right. And then Appendix B is about the final tribal council. I think she would have been set up well for the final tribal council.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think she was ready to go straight to it.
She was ready to go. All right, yeah. David. We talked about a lot of things. What's your final assessment on Mari?
You know, as I noted a few minutes ago, several people deserve credit for turning around this vote and saving Figgy. But Figgy herself does not appear to have been one of those people. She really should be thanking Jay and Michelle for the fact that she wasn't the first one voted out of her tribe. And she should also be watching her back later in the game if she gets there with either of them, because they will only become more dangerous as the game goes on. Unfortunately, we won't get to see Mari in that later part of the game. Negative first impressions can be a killer on Survivor if the player in question doesn't do enough work to overturn them. I think, and you may disagree, that we can surmise that was part of the problem here on two fronts. Mari was apparently quickly thought to be a threat for one of a number of reasons. And I still maintain she seemed to have some problems interacting socially with many of her tribe mates, or at least there were perceived problems on their end,
mm-hmm.
which in a game of perception, where perception is real, it becomes a real problem. On top of that, several players noted that she didn't really have much in the way of strategic talks with anyone. And, you know, there's an old Survivor saying that if someone isn't talking strategy with you, they are probably talking about you. So that can be scary.
Ouch.
I would say that all
that's
of these
why I
factors,
do so many podcasts, David. I feel like
that's
if
right.
people aren't talking with me, they're talking about me.
Well, in your case, it's probably both. I'm
yeah, I should be so lucky if people are talking about me.
So I would say that all of those factors, you know, in particular, the ones I highlighted, combined to make Mari a fairly easy target once the voting gun was no longer aimed at Figgy.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why Mari lost.
Sad to see Mari go. I do think that she could have gotten something going later on. And I do wonder if she could be one of these people that if she comes back and plays a second time, could she make a leap in her second time out? I've talked about a lot before on the podcast. Parvati doesn't really know the game the first time she's playing. Tyson doesn't really know the game the first time that he plays, but they do have a lot of the raw skills that you need to do well in this game. And once they sort of figure out, sort of not figgy out, once they really figure out what the day-to-day game movements look like and in terms of what you're supposed to be doing and saying, they become extremely dangerous. I do feel like she has that kind of upside.
I agree. I think she could have been a contender.
She could have been. All right. So this is where we start to switch gears into what's coming up next on Wednesday. I do want to quickly mention what's coming up next on Rob Has a Website in terms of the blogs that we have going on. Of course, we have a lot of different bloggers that blog about each episode of the show. On the website, you can read those on robisawebsite.com. Just scroll past the podcast or click on blogs at the top. I believe you can also go to robisawebsite.com/blogs to see the latest blogs at any point. The rundown this week, Scott Gallagher is going to talk about why he's so sad that his winner pick is gone. We also have Michael Trudeau talking about the edit in this crazy week. On Sunday, Christian Williams posted about the diplomatic view of the show. And Catherine Lucas is back on Monday to talk about whether conventional wisdom is still in play on Survivor. And on Tuesday or Wednesday, before the new episode comes up, check out our own Christine Larivière will talk about some of the cattier comments made by the casual viewers to gauge their reaction to Macking Gate.
Macking Gate.
Yes, they were macking it. All right, David. So this Wednesday, we get back into it, and there appears to be some sort of Survivor twist coming our way on Wednesday night. Do you want to begin to speculate on what you think that twist might be?
Yeah, I'm with you in hoping that they create just one new tribe of mixed generations while keeping a Gen X and a millennial tribe. I think you talked about that with PG. Considering the theme of the season, I think it would be a mistake to dissolve both tribes into each other so soon.
Yeah.
So I am really hopeful that you're right about that.
I feel like we don't have a good verb for this in our Survivor vernacular when they go from two tribes to three tribes.
Didn't we go to mitosis?
We did talk about that, but I don't feel like that. Oh, it's a tribe mitosis.
Yeah.
I feel like we're losing a lot of our listeners at that point. We're talking about tribe mitosis.
Yeah, and the ones who know biology are going to correct us. We're really going to get their attention.
They're right. Really, no, it's a no-win situation.
Yeah,
it's a no-win situation. So I don't know what the verb is from two tribes to three tribes. Let us know in the comments.
Just be like Australian Survivor and call everything a merge.
Yes. Well, an Australian merge is when you go from three tribes to two tribes.
Yeah.
So we'll have that hopefully then after a couple of weeks of this. But do you believe it? Do you believe it's 100% we're going to three tribes?
Well, nothing's ever 100%. I'll go with 95%.
95%. Okay, we're going to three tribe format. Okay, I'm excited about that to see how that plays out for a little bit. So do you think that we're going to do the thing where we have tribes of six Gen Xers, six millennials, and one tribe 50-50?
Right. That's what I'm hoping for.
It'll be interesting.
Like I said.
We haven't seen it before.
Right. And it'll allow them to both show how the millennials and Gen Xers continue to operate on their own and one tribe of how they operate together. And my full prediction, just judging by the storytelling, I think Paul is headed for a downfall, not a fall down like he had, but a downfall. The way I'm seeing it happening, I feel like he's going to end up on a mixed tribe with one of the fellow Gen Xers who is not a fan, like David or Cece or that other one. What's her name? Lucy, obviously. Then that mixed tribe isn't going to work together very well in the challenge, and they're going to lose, and he will be the easy target.
Yeah,
so that's what I think is going to happen.
Boy, I think that you're onto the right track with this, but I don't know if it's going to happen this quickly. I don't know. Seems very fast for it to happen. And I don't have a better scenario, though. So I do think that that's a thing. I think that, we will see that in this pre-merge. I just don't know if it happens this week. I'm trying to think of anybody else that we've seen portrayed in any sort of negative light where it could be coming back around onto them. And I don't really have that either.
Well, maybe Figgy or Michaela, if they end up, you know, in a similar situation, if maybe it's the two of them, and you know, someone else like Zeke or Adam on a mixed tribe, mm-hmm. and that tribe loses, then maybe it goes the other way, and Figgy ends up getting it, or Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, there was enough argument there that, you know, that could still happen too.
I'll say, just to throw a different scenario out there that we've seen before in Survivor history, where that somebody gets burned and then they are in the minority, and then because of a tribe swap, they get the chance to get their just desserts on a person that screwed them over. Look no further than T-Bird and Frank back in Survivor Australia, where they get a chance to get back at Silas after a tribe swap. So I'll say, I'll come up with a fan fiction scenario where Hannah ends up in a spot where Zeke and Adam have a chance to get back at her for her betrayal at the last tribal council. And I'll say Hannah is voted out, but don't feel very strongly about that. And it is probably extremely unlikely to be the case.
Yeah, I'm not seeing that one.
Look, David, what do you want me to say? The same thing. It's like, oh, yeah, I'll have what she's having. Yeah.
Just say David's right. David's always right.
Well, that's again, I think that you have tapped into the most likely scenario. So we'll see. But it's very hard to tell, especially when we don't even know what the tribe dynamics are going to be.
Right.
All right. So, David, what's the hashtag this week?
Well, got a few of them. Maybe Freaks, Geeks, and Zeeks.
Yeah. I think that's too long. I think we should just do either Zeeks and Geeks or Freaks and Zeeks.
Or we could just let people decide what they want. You know, is it Freaks and Zeeks?
I get a lot of complaints when it's a vague hashtag, David.
Oh, okay.
People don't like that.
Well, I don't know. Under the new Twitter rules, are hashtags considered part of the 140? I don't know what they've
I think
changed
they're considered.
It.
I think they're considered part of the 140.
There's newfangled millennial hashtags, you know.
You know, I mean, Twitter's been around like, you know, we're closing in on 10 years on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I was talking to someone recently and it occurred to me that in my household, I'm the only one who uses Twitter. My kids do not.
Yeah. All right. So, David, what's your official hashtag? Lock it in.
I still want Freaks, Geeks, and Zeeks.
Freaks, Geeks, and Zeeks. There you go. All right. David will be back with us again next week to talk about what goes on in episode 3 and why that latest player lost. Plus, we're going to still have the wiggle room, a little bit of a flip-flop where why Mari lost came up first this week, but Josh Wiggler and I are going to be recording probably sometime Monday night, and then I'll have that up for you, the wiggle room, on Tuesday. And of course, be sure to check out my interview with PG, plus also my voicemails with Darnell and everything else leading you back up to the know-it-alls this Wednesday night. And of course, Otis Bushkowskis is going to join me on the recap and Haley Strong on the voicemails coming up for this next week. Make sure you don't miss any of it. Subscribe to the podcast. Go to robiswebsite.com/iTunes. And we always appreciate your feedback and star ratings. David, anything else?
Nope. I think we've covered it all.
All right. What's more likely to happen this week? A Lucy confessional or a Bears win?
Oh, definitely a Lucy confessional.
All right. You called your shot. All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.